And now, it's time for our weekly news round. Lutheran Radio News with Paul Hill.
After a wedge tornado ripped through some rural towns in northern Illinois on April the 9th, Lutherans continue to respond with compassion, care, and most importantly, with the gospel. The Reverend Michael Mayer, Disaster Response Manager for the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod Office of National Mission, ONM, traveled from the Synod's International Center in St. Louis to affected towns like Rochelle, Illinois, on April the 10th. He joined more than 275 volunteers from Lutheran Church Charities, the LCC, and LCMS districts across Illinois to assist the distressed communities. When we arrived, we saw the tornado had hit with a wide swathe, bringing trees down onto houses, ripping the roofs off others, and some houses were only slabs, said Mayer. For the first 48 hours, a lot of people were working on adrenaline, trying to recover. The reported EF4 tornado came with wind speeds of 166 to 200 miles per hour. EF5 is the highest tornado rating used by the National Weather Service when a tornado's wind speed exceeds 200 miles an hour. Wedge tornadoes are typically wider than other twisters and can be mistaken for large dark cloud formations in some cases. This one came suddenly around 7 p.m. on April the 9th, leaving local residents stunned by its swift devastation. At first you think everyone is overreacting, then you start hearing ambulances, said Robert Challenge, a 45-year-old Rochelle resident who has lived there most of his life. Challenge's two children attend St. Paul's Lutheran Church and School in Rochelle, which became a staging facility for LCC disaster response volunteers. Thankfully, there was an open house going on at Tilton Elementary that may have saved about a dozen families who had been in their houses when the storm came through. It wasn't until Friday morning that we were able to find the damage left by the tornado, said the Reverend Greg Hoffman, pastor of St. Paul's. People are in shock and some are still waiting for relatives to show up. Hoffman said he's amazed by the timely response of the volunteers who came to help. We have over 275 volunteers here, including chainsaw crews and 14 comfort dogs with 18 handlers, said Tim Hetzner, the Northern Illinois District Disaster Response Coordinator and LCC President. Hetzner said in addition to Rochelle, other affected Illinois towns include Fairdale, Kirkland and Lindenwood, and the storm's path also included a lot of farmland. Synod ONM disaster responses like Mayer provide care, comfort and relief for disaster victims while providing the assurance of the gospel throughout the exasperating experience of recovering from such a crisis. We can be confident that God is here protecting these people and he will use this terrible tragedy for good, Mayer said. An arrest warrant has been issued for the mother of a severely disabled man left in the woods for several days near a Philadelphia park, authorities said. Naia Parla left her 21-year-old son, who is quadriplegic and has cerebral palsy, lying in leaves and covered with a blanket next to a wheelchair and Bible while she left town, police said. He was found Friday night near Cobbs Creek Park. Police believed he was left there between the time he and his mother were seen together on Easter Sunday and before his mother boarded a bus on Monday for Maryland to visit her boyfriend, said Lieutenant John Walker of the Southwest Detectives Division. Walker said the victim was found around the corner from their home and described the scenario authorities believed to have taken place this way. She pushes him about 150 yards from the highway into the wooded area, takes him out of his wheelchair, lays him on the ground, puts a blanket over him, and leaves a Bible with him, and then just walks away. During the period he was exposed to the elements, the young man was completely defenseless in an area with wild animals, with no water, and in cold, damp weather, Walker said. It was only by the grace of God that he survived this. Amazing, he said. Contacted in Maryland after the young man's school became concerned, the victim's mother told relatives and authorities that he was with her, Walker said. Obviously, her statements made during the week were not truthful, he said. Her boyfriend, however, assumed other relatives were caring for the young man and was in shock when he learned what had happened, Walker said. A 16-year-old son, also residing with the family, is now in the care of other family relatives, Walker said. Parla, 41, of Philadelphia, will face charges including aggravated assault, reckless endangering, neglect of a care-dependent person, kidnapping, unlawful restraint and false imprisonment, according to police. Walker said that the son was hospitalised with dehydration, malnutrition, a deep cut on his back that caused concern about potential infection and possible eye injuries, but he appeared to be improving. He seemed to be a little happier yesterday, Walker said. You could tell he knew his family were around and felt more comfortable. Nigeria on Tuesday marked the first anniversary of Boko Haram's abduction of 219 schoolgirls from the northeastern town of Chibok as part of a series of events planned around the world. The commemoration and renewed calls for their release came as Amnesty International said the Islamists had kidnapped at least 2,000 women and girls since the beginning of last year. The UN and African rights groups also called for an end to the targeting of boys and girls in the conflict, which has left at least 15,000 dead and some 1.5 million people homeless, 800,000 of them children. The focus of the one-year commemoration was on Nigeria's capital, Abuja, where a vigil has been held demanding the girls' immediate release almost every day since they were kidnapped. Prayers, candlelit vigils and marches have been held or are planned, and campaign group member Habiba Balogun said it was important to mark the anniversary. It's wonderful that the world is remembering and sending the message that we are not going to forget and we are not going to stop until we know what has happened to our girls, he told AFP. Boko Haram fighters stormed the government secondary school in the remote town in Borno State on the evening of April the 14th last year, seizing 276 girls who were preparing for end-of-year exams. 57 escaped, but nothing has been heard of the 219 others since May last year, when about 100 of them appeared in a Boko Haram video dressed in Muslim attire and reciting the Quran. Boko Haram leader Abu Bakr Shaku has since said they have all converted to Islam and have been married off. The mass abduction brought the brutality of the Islamist insurgency unprecedented worldwide attention and prompted a viral social media campaign demanding their immediate release. Nigeria's government was criticised for its initial response to the crisis and was forced into accepting foreign help in the rescue effort after a groundswell of global outrage. The military has said it knows where the girls are, but has ruled out a rescue effort because of the dangers to the girls' lives. In a new report published on Tuesday, Amnesty quoted a senior military officer as saying the girls are being held at different Boko Haram camps, including in Cameroon and possibly Chad. The Chibok abduction was one of 38 it had documented since the beginning of last year, with women and girls who escaped saying they were subject to forced labour and marriage as well as rape. Outgoing President Goodluck Jonathan's government has been accused of indifference to the fate of the girls after initially trying to downplay the size of the kidnapping and even deny that it had happened. Jonathan's election defeat last month to former military ruler Muhammad Abu Buhari has raised hopes of a breakthrough. He has vowed to spare no effort to destroy the militants. 21 of the 57 girls who escaped are currently studying at the American University of Nigeria in Yola, the capital of neighboring Adamawa State. They told AFP in an email exchange with university staff they were hoping to make positive future changes, not just in Chibok, but in our country and the world. The kidnapped girls were in their thoughts and prayers every day, they said, but they did not blame Boko Haram foot soldiers. I forgive Boko Haram for what they have done, and I pray God forgives them too, said one. The operator of the wrecked Fukushima nuclear plant said on Monday that the first robot sent inside one of the melted reactors stalled before finishing its work, but collected data that indicates a path exists to send robots deeper into the reactor. That's good news for experts designing a robot for a future mission aimed at locating and investigating the residue of the nuclear fuel that melted in the 2011 disaster. Tokyo Electric Power Company said the robot stalled after completing about two-thirds of its planned mission Friday inside the Unit 1 containment vessel. TEPCO spokesman Teriyaki Kabayashi said the robot collected temperature and radiation data and images from parts of the platform around the area known as the pedestal below the bottom of the reactor core before it became stuck and unrecoverable. The robot had been intended for only one use because of the high radiation levels. A second robot mission, scheduled for Monday, was postponed while engineers investigate the cause of the stalling. Kobayashi said the robot's treads may have become stuck on a grating or in a gap as it moved. The 2-foot-long, snake-shaped robot entered the containment chamber through a pipe and transformed into a U-shaped crawler after it landed on the platform. A 2.5-minute edited compilation of images transmitted by the robot, released Monday by TEPCO, showed steam wafting from inside the dark container lit by a lamp mounted on the robot as it slowly maneuvered around debris that looked like small rocks and metal parts. The images contain numerous white dots believed to be caused by gamma rays. Kobayashi said the test also showed the robot tolerated radiation and that the levels were significantly lower than anticipated. That means robots can last longer and some wireless devices may even be usable, although the radiation levels were way too high for humans to enter the area, even wearing protective gear. Without more data, it will be difficult to figure out exactly how to safely locate and remove the radioactive debris. Nuclear officials are expected to revise the plant's decades-long decommissioning roadmap in the coming weeks, with more leeway and options in case earlier plans prove unfeasible. TEPCO plans to send in a different amphibious robot next year for a further investigation of the three reactors that suffered meltdowns after the 2011 earthquake and tsunami. Computer simulations and cosmic ray examinations have shown that almost all fuel rods in the Unit 1 reactor melted, breached the core, and fell to the bottom of the containment chamber. Because of the damage to the reactors, large volumes of cooling water continue to leak from them, causing contamination and hampering the plant's cleanup process. And finally, the goose may be cooked for two Canadian teenagers who were arrested and faced multiple charges for allegedly shooting a water bird named after Kate, Britain's Duchess of Cambridge. Kate, a brown and white Asiatic goose, and her life mate William were fixtures in a pond at a cemetery in the town of Picton, 125 miles east of Toronto on the shores of Lake Ontario. According to police in the Glenwood Cemetery, vandals broke into the pond enclosure on March the 21st and shot at the geese and other waterfowl using a pellet gun. Dozens of ducks fled, but William and Kate could not escape because their wings had been clipped. Two suspects, aged 17 and 18, were charged with killing an animal other than cattle, possession of a dangerous firearm, and trespassing, Canadian police announced Thursday. If convicted, they could face a maximum penalty of 5 years in prison and fines. William and the geese's many admirers were left heartbroken over Kate's untimely and senseless death, according to the cemetery. Volunteers who fed the pair named them after Britain's royal couple, following Prince William and his wife Kate's first official international outing in 2011 to Canada. My name is Paul Hill. Thank you for listening to Lutheran Radio UK. Lutheran Radio News will be back next Friday. Until then, every blessing to you and goodbye for now.
On your PC, tablet, mobile phone, and internet radio receiver, this is Lutheran Radio UK.